morning. I want to welcome all of you at all of our campuses, Steiner Ranch, Brushy Creek, and those of you who are joining us this evening, we say good evening to you as well. And we're so excited that we're together. If you're a guest or visitor, welcome. It's good to have you here. We're excited that you're here to join us. I wonder, have you ever felt to yourself like your life is just too complicated? Too much to know? Too much to do? Too many things to take care of? If you felt that way, I would just say to you, welcome to the human race. Now, human race, that sounds interesting. Is that like a contest? Am I falling behind? These questions are things that we wrestle with. What if your life was simpler and actually more successful? Now, throughout history, people have struggled with the complications of life, and in Jesus' day, this was something that they dealt with all the time. You see, the rabbis had gone back to the Old Testament and walked through the Old Testament, and they found 613 different commands that every good Jewish person was supposed to obey. 613! Can you imagine learning all those, much less trying to practice them every day? In other words, if we took one of those commands and preached on it each Sunday, it would take us 12 years to cover all of those commands. And so Jesus comes on the scene as a rabbi and a teacher, and he's explaining the way of God to people. And there was a lot of pressure on him, because not only was he expected to know all these commands, but also to know their priority and their value. And frequently, those who opposed him would try to trick him or test him. And so we come to a pivotal conversation that takes place in Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 10. So I would encourage you to grab a Bible and turn there. We've got Bibles located around the room in all of our venues. You can feel free to get up and get one, or you can go online and pull up a Bible app online and follow along. But in Luke chapter 10, we see a pivotal conversation starting in verse 25. And it reads, "On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. 'Teacher,' he asked, 'what must I do to inherit eternal life?'" So this is kind of one of those trick questions. Jesus, do you really know the Old Testament law? Do you really understand it? Does it really make sense? Do you understand the priority? And he's doing it to test Jesus, or to trick him, to trip him up. And so Jesus does a pretty smart thing. "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" One of the best ways to kind of gather your wits about you and not get yourself into an argument is always turn people's questions back to them. It goes kind of like this: "Honey, what do you think?" Saves a lot of problems along the way. Jesus asks him, and his response is insightful. He answered, verse 27, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." In other words, do this and you'll have eternal life. You'll have life before God. Now, what's interesting here is that particular combination of taking the command to love God with all of me and love my neighbor as myself, that particular combination had actually been what Jesus had been teaching. So we don't know whether the rabbi that's talking to Jesus has adopted what Jesus is saying, or he's simply mimicking it back to Jesus, because he's been saying this all along, that he's mimicking this back to Jesus because he's trying to trip Jesus or catch him in something. So anyway, this statement, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbors yourself," these commandments are the ones that Jesus affirms and he's been teaching as the commandments that are priority. In other words, you can take all 613 commandments and summarize them in just these two. Now, first thing I want you to notice in this passage is that Jesus is an absolute genius. Jesus is an absolute genius. When he summarizes the whole law in these two commands, he's brilliant in what he does. He's brilliant for a couple reasons. The first is because these are easy to remember. I mean, the driving, activating force in both of these commands is the same. It's love. And he covers the whole playing field. In other words, the vertical relationship with God and the horizontal relationship with people, that's covered. And think about it. In every situation, if you can just remember to ask two questions. How is what I'm doing in this situation, how is what I'm responding, what I'm saying, what I decide, how does that demonstrate my love for God? And how does it take into account the people around me, my love for people? Very, very straightforward. It's brilliant. In addition to that, it's brilliant on multiple levels because it's an amazing way to impact the world, to impact society. It has benefits for the individuals if we'll just do it, and it has benefits for the culture around us. So setting the Bible aside for a minute, let's just talk about the benefits of loving our neighbor as ourselves. Let me give you a few of them here. When it comes to your health, there is a direct correlation between a person's life expectancy. Think about that. How long you live, life expectancy, and the number of relationships that he or she has with those who live around them. Malcolm Gladwell mentioned that in his book Outliers, but there's a whole bunch of research on this. In fact, I was reading this week about some of that research. One of the researchers, a lady, began to study this, and in her study of it, she came to understand that the life expectancy was up to 15 years longer for those people who were relationally connected to the people that they see regularly. And so what she did, she went out and met all of her neighbors, started having neighborhood parties, started having people over. She got involved in community events with her neighbors. She said, hey, you know, you can quit smoking, you can learn to eat healthy, you can exercise all the time, or you can just be friendly. Just go meet people. It changes your whole outlook, which has incredible benefits. When Jesus said, love your neighbors yourself, it's good for us and it's good for others. In addition to that, when it comes to just the community impact, crime, social networks in a neighborhood lower crime, improve public health, and raise test scores. Putnam put that forward in his book, Bowling Alone. There's all kinds of data that supports this. Anybody in here prefer lower taxes? Anybody prefer lower taxes? Do you realize that if the people in Austin began to get to know their neighbors and started asking, how can we help with little things, your taxes would go down? Well, okay, I know. There are politicians' taxes never go down. But maybe they would spend them for something, you know, something else, because it cost the government tons of money in law enforcement. I've had this conversation with Art Acevedo personally. Tons of money in law enforcement costs, in community development, mental health costs, not just to mention that the people who call the city and say the people down the street have not mowed their lawn in a long time. Somebody has to get out here and do something about it. Where do you think it comes from? The money to pay for that comes from our taxes rather than from the neighbors recognizing that the widow down the street has no help and they organize to take turns cutting her grass. It changes everything in society. Let me give you one more. When it comes to the issue of a crisis, and we've had a bunch of them, we've had floods, we've had fire. When a crisis occurs in a community, the systems are overwhelmed and neighbors are the first responders. And the more people know and trust each other, the more they can help each other when it comes to a crisis situation. How many times has the ambulance pulled up in the neighborhood and you don't have any idea who the people are behind that door? You wouldn't know how to contact their next of kin. You wouldn't know that they had a pet that needed to be fed or taken care of. You wouldn't have any idea. Neighbors are the best first responders if they do what Jesus said, to love your neighbor as yourself. So That's just the societal, emotional, personal benefits of loving your neighbor. This is what Jesus is telling us to do. Now think about it this way. What if every Christian decided to take Jesus' command seriously and get to know and get to care for the people that are close to them, the people that live in proximity to them, bringing the component of prayer and bringing the component of the gospel into those conversations and into those relationships? Think about it this way. We're called to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, but we know that we didn't start this. We love Him because why? Because He first loved us. God pours His love into us and we respond by loving Him back. What happens in a community when Christians then take the love that they've experienced from God, this overwhelming sacrificial love, and we simply let it bleed out into the neighborhoods and the apartment complexes and the people that we live around? Do you realize that in all the studies we've looked at so far, that there's no measurable difference between the way Christians neighbor or treat the people next door and non-Christians? And yet Jesus says basically, like, here's the great command: love your neighbor as yourself. The reason why we struggle with this is no different than why the person in the story struggled with this, and that is people are often looking for a loophole. How do I get out of this? Notice what happens next in the passage. Verse 29, but he wanted to justify himself. You mean just simply love God with all of me and love my neighbor as me? And I'm going to try to justify myself? Absolutely. He wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Now, I put these on your outline so you could just see them there. So if you got a bulletin when you came in, there's an outline in there. The rabbis had been debating this for years, and they'd come up with three different definitions of neighbor. The first one is that they said, well, neighbors are the people that are neighborly. In other words, the people that are nice. Those are our real neighbors. In other words, the people that treat us well, we can treat them well. The people that turn us in to the HOA because our sprinklers kind of turn and sprayed into the street, we don't have to like them. The people that have a dog that barks all the time, or worse yet, when they walk by, they don't look down and pick up the mess. And they leave it in our yard. Like, why would we have to be nice to them? The apartment above us that loves to play loud music in the middle of my afternoon nap. Like, we don't have to love the people that don't treat us well. In other words, neighbors are neighborly. They had another definition. The second definition is neighbors are real Israelites, or neighbors are the ones who belong here. In other words, what they said was, the land has been given to the nation of Israel, so anybody that's outside of Israel that is here are Roman occupiers, aliens from other countries. We do not have to love them because they don't belong here. I won't get into a political conversation about that, but Jesus said, unqualified, love your neighbor as yourself. The third definition that they had, this is really good. They said, a neighbor is really a true Israelite. In other words, what the Pharisees were saying is those people who keep the law and do it well the way we think they ought to, now those are real Israelites, so those are really our neighbors. And sinners and people that live lifestyles that we don't agree with, we don't have to because they're not really our neighbors. It's kind of like when the sign goes up in the yard supporting a political candidate that belongs to the party different than yours, and you know you're not having those people over for barbecue, right? They don't do what we do. They don't live the way we live. All of these definitions that they came up with. What's interesting is the Hebrew definition, the word for neighbor, is really straightforward. It simply means one whose path I cross. If I cross paths with somebody, then they're considered my neighbor. Or the Greek definition, it just simply means nearby. Those who are in near proximity to us. But like the man here in the story, looking for a loophole, we tend to do that too. We tend to want to narrow the definition of neighbor down so it fits the people that we enjoy being with, that we feel the most comfortable with, and excludes the people that God in his sovereignty brings across our path or puts in the house next door to us. That way we can feel good about the people we're with. Actually, I had this conversation with a pastor in town. We were discussing this whole idea of neighboring and what would it be like if the whole city of Austin, we started living this out in our city. And we're talking about this. He says, listen, he said, I'm going to have a real trouble with this because I have so many people in my life that I have to relate to. So if I'm going to spend time with people, I want to spend time with people that are fun, that are young, that like sports. Those are the people I'm going to hang out with. I don't want to meet people I don't know. People live next to me. Why should I do that? What was he doing? He was defining Jesus' command in the form that it would work for him. He was creating a loophole there. So, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. Listen to his story. He says in verse 30, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Guy on the side of the road dying. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. And so too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. So two people who crossed paths, were in near proximity to an individual that needed help, had a difficult time thinking about, what if that was me? Love your neighbor as yourself. What if that was my son or my daughter or my spouse or my friend laying on the side of the road? What would I want if that was me? They just ignored that and they kept on going. Proximity didn't matter and love did not play a role here. Watch what happens next. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. He put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins, gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. What did he do? He saw the guy. He was close by, saw the need, had pity on him, took compassion on him, did for him what he would want that man to do for himself or one of his own, took care of him. But here's the obstacle. The obstacle is he's a Samaritan, which means politically he had a very different view of life than the Jewish man that was laying on the side of the road. Spiritually, they had different religions. They didn't belong to the same religion. Culturally, they hated each other. And yet, he obeyed when the other man's spiritual leaders just walked on by and left him there. So Jesus asked the question, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. So, let's talk about us. Let's talk about us. Let's ask the question, what would it be like for each of us to obey the command of Jesus to love our neighbors as ourselves? What would that look like? How many of you here know and relate to your physical neighbors? Now, as you're thinking about that, some of you are thinking with the loophole mentality. You're going, "What? Wait a minute, Tim, this guy didn't live next, the Samaritan didn't live next door to this guy. Can I define my neighbors as the soccer team that we hang out with and play with, or my work associates, or, you know, my buddies from my past, or can I define my neighbors in that term, those terms? Doesn't that fit?" The answer to that is absolutely, you're right. Those people are your neighbors. But the question is, does having those people be your neighbors, does that actually exclude you from caring for your physical neighbors or loving the people that live nearby. In fact, what I would say is there may be something that we're missing here, and Paul talks about it in Acts chapter 17. He's talking about what God does in the world in the area of placing us where he wants us to be. And watch what he says. He says, from one man, he's referring to God, he made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he, God, determined the times set for them and the exact places where they should live. Whoa. What Paul is saying is, throughout the history of the world, God has been involved in the migrations of people. The various governments that have come about, God hasn't ignored that. He's been actually involved in that. And where people would live and when they would live in history. In other words, God is working behind the scenes to move people where he wants them to live. So it may be that you thought, I bought this house because of its curb appeal. Or because it has the right number of bedrooms. Or because I can put my humongous big screen television set in there. Or because it's in the right school district. Or because it's close to public transportation. Or. But what Paul's saying in this passage is that God actually puts you there for a redemptive purpose. He put you exactly where he wanted you to live. And all the people that live around you, in the apartment above, on each side of you, in the cul-de-sac with you, those people have been placed there by a sovereign God himself. Now, why would he do that? He tells us in the very next verse. In verse 27, he says, God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. God placed people in certain places to raise questions in their mind and heart that would cause them to inquire about God. So here's the question. When people reach out for him, is there someone who can help them? That's why Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. God is working in the people that live around you. Are you connected enough to them to be able to help them in their searching? I got to tell you, I failed at this recently, and it was very hard for me to deal with. So let me just confess my sins to you. We moved into a new neighborhood 4 years ago, and we made it our purpose to try to get to know people. We've had a delightful time connecting with our neighbors, had all kinds of spiritual conversations. We did explore God. We've had a great time, but the neighbor that lived immediately to my right, elderly woman. Her family moved her here from California because they couldn't keep an eye on her and she couldn't stay by herself. They bought her house, set her up in that, and she was living in that house. And she was sick all the time. In fact, it was kind of weird because when I would go over to knock on her door, a lot of times she couldn't get to the door and I just kind of felt awkward and kind of weird about it. And she came to a couple neighborhood things, but she couldn't stay. And so anyway, I just didn't bother. I mean, to be honest with you guys, I just didn't bother. I didn't reach out. I didn't invest, I didn't put time in, and she went in the hospital for what would be her last days on earth, and I had a knock one Saturday morning on my door, and two men came to the door that were part of a cult, and they asked the question, how's Myrna doing, of which I couldn't answer. I knew she was back in the hospital, and they said, we've been coming by every week to spend time with her, and she's received great comfort from the things that we've been teaching her. And I thought to myself, okay, the pastor of Hill Country Bible Church is right next door. I'm not having conversations with her, but these cult people are out in my neighborhood reaching out to her. And it was as if the Spirit of God just slapped me right upside the head. Like, Tim, I brought her from California, and I put her in the house next door to you, and you didn't care. And I realized that I had missed an opportunity to speak into her life. My guess is that I've been doing that my whole life. And my guess is that many of us have been doing that our whole lives. So This morning I want to do something that's kind of different, and I'm going to ask you guys to see how well you're doing at knowing your neighbors. And so if you'll reach in your bulletin and pull it out, you're going to see something in there that looks like this. Little tic-tac-toe board. I want everybody to get theirs out because we're going to do a little quiz here. Now, don't do that loophole thinking where you think, I'm too good for this, I'm above this, or I don't have a pen, or like I just don't do things. It's kind of like when your kid tells you, well, you know, the teacher pulled a pop quiz on me today, Dad, and you know what? I just thought that was unfair. I didn't really want to do it, so I just didn't take it. Now, what you said to your son after he said that to you, that's what I'm actually saying to you right now, but I'm not going to say it, okay? You just think it. So I want everybody to do this, and here's how we do this. Put yourself right here in the center. That's your place, okay? So if you live in a traditional subdivision, these would be the houses in front of you, the two on each side, and the ones behind you. If you live in a multifamily or an apartment, you might flip this up and like have the floor below and the floor above and whatever it takes. So if you're in a cul-de-sac, you maybe do it in kind of a circle. But here's what I'm asking you to do. Name as many of the adults by first name that you can think of right now. The number of adults that you can name first names, okay? Don't cheat from the relational one that you're sitting next to if you got one of those beside you. See if you can do this. Just take the test. See how many of these you can get. Now, while you're doing this, let me just make it a little bit less painful. According to the Pew Research, 28% of Americans can name no one that lives in proximity to them. And only 19% can name everyone, all of them. So you're probably someplace in between. Why do I want first names? Here's why I want first names. I don't know a whole lot about love, but I do think it's probably important if you're going to love somebody that you at least can call them by name. Hey, bub. How you doing, man? Hanging in there, hon? Like, at least know their name, okay? So let's do this. Let's see how many we know, okay? You writing them down now? So we always have to give the overachievers the opportunity to show off, okay? So if you can name everybody, just raise your hand. Go ahead. You can do it. Go ahead. Okay. Less than 10% can name everybody. I'm not going to ask if you don't know anybody, but so here's what we're asking you to do. This is very, very practical, very straightforward. Here's what we're asking you to do. Here's our goal, that what you would do over the next couple weeks, that you would go and get to know your neighbors. That you would walk across the street or next door and you would knock on the door. And here's how the conversation goes, because I know a lot of people, this is really scary to you. I know it is, because I've done it. Never know what's coming on the other side of that door. Those people might be as weird as I am. Last year for Easter, Cindy made these little chocolate miniature bundt cakes. And then she took one of those peeps, you know, the little peeps. She got the lime green ones, and she put the peep on top of the bundt cake. So it looked like the peep had a major accident. And she took one side of the street, and I took the other side of the street, and we went around, and we were knocking on doors and just wishing everybody a happy Easter and handing out these bundt cakes. And at every door I go to, I'm like, I hope nobody's home. Only with the ants, you can't really set it on their front porch because then you've created a peep with an accident covered with ants. Not good. And here's what I discovered. Every time someone was home, they were so delighted that somebody cared enough to just stop by and greet them. It's an amazing thing. So here's what we're asking you to do, is just go knock on the door, introduce yourself. Now, some of you are going to have to eat crow. Like, I know I've been living here for 5 years, and I know we've seen each other because we've done the Hey Bub. But I'm coming because I really want to introduce myself. I'd like to get your name. I just want you to know that I feel like I hadn't been a good neighbor, and I want to meet you face to face and let you know that I'm here. And if there's ever anything you need, feel free to ask. If there's ever anything you, or if you have any ideas for how we could improve our neighborhood, I'm wide open. In fact, maybe we'll have a barbecue someday or cook out, or we'll do something to kind of get people together. Because I think, don't you think it'd be really good if we actually knew each other? And what you're going to find when you say that is there will probably be in those 8 houses around you one really grumpy person. And the rest of them will love you. And here's the other thing. While you're knocking on that door getting ready to eat crow, keep in mind that the other person hasn't made the initiative to come meet you yet, so they're in a worse spot than you are. You got there first, okay? You got there first. Somebody told me this today that in the neighborhood that they lived in before, there were 2 people that lived with one house separating them that had lived there for 10 years, and they were best friends in high school and never met for 10 years until they started neighboring and brought them together. It's like, you've been living one house away from me for 10 years, had no idea. That's the American way. That's what we do. So go meet your neighbors. Second thing is, on your way out today, I would encourage every household to pick up this book, The Art of Neighboring. It's got all kinds of really good ideas about how to go about doing that. And along with that comes a refrigerator magnet. And you can write the names of the people as you're collecting them so you don't forget them the next time you go out front. Okay, so you start actually learning them. If you're over the age of about 35, you probably have an issue with memory. Okay, so just get one of these. And what I want you to do third, so first of all, get a name. Second, get a magnet, put the names on here. And then the third thing I want you to do is start praying for your neighbors. At least once a week, just pray for your neighbors. Pray blessing on them. Pray that God would move in their life. Pray that they would experience His love. And here's what's going to happen. You're going to start discovering that God is going to open unusual doors, and they won't be a burden. They will be a delight to you. A delight. I got to tell you, Saturday night is my least favorite time to do things, except watch Michigan State football. It's my least favorite time to do things, because when the alarm goes off at 4:20 on Sunday morning, I'm up. So I hate doing stuff on Saturday night. Last night, one of the people in our neighborhood was getting married, and we went to the wedding. And got there, and a whole bunch of people from our neighborhood were there. We had pictures made together. You know why they know each other? Because we invited them together and built relationships with them. Had to leave the wedding early. Well, I stayed till the end of the wedding, but had to leave before the reception took place because we were going to a 70th birthday party. One of the ladies in our neighborhood, she was turning 70, and her husband threw a big party, and we were with the Bengali peoples of North Austin enjoying an unbelievable celebration. And those things were not burdensome to me because I've got people that are saying, we love you guys. You guys have done so much. We don't feel like we've done hardly anything except just bring people together. But the love of Jesus comes through. If you're looking for ideas, let me give you one person's journey. Let's watch together.
I always thought I'd go far away on mission. I really did. I really thought my calling would be international, and I never in a million years thought that the Lord would ask me to walk outside of my door in the mission field where I live and get to know my neighbors. Kristen Schell, and I live in Austin, Texas. I am a wife and a mother of four children. Any given day, I am in the kitchen or in the minivan. I am active in the kids' school. I'm a writer, and I volunteer at church. We've been in this neighborhood almost 10 years. I always knew we were supposed to love our neighbors because that's the great commandment. But how you live that out day to day is hard, especially when you don't know your neighbors, which is the situation I was in. I did not know my neighbors. Sure, I knew, you know, a handful of them. And so there was this huge question, what do you want me to do, Lord? Here I am, Lord. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to walk across the street and bang on doors? Do you want me to take cookies? What do you want me to do, Lord? God answers prayers in really winsome ways. I was hosting a party with a friend in our backyard, and I didn't have any tables. And so I ordered a picnic table from Lowe's. And when it arrived 2 days later, I knew that for the purposes of the party, I was going to have it in my backyard. But as soon as that party was over, I was moving that table in the front yard, and it was going to be a gathering place. And so I painted it turquoise, which is my favorite color. And I did. I put it outside underneath a tree in the front yard. It was awkward at first. I have this table. It's bright turquoise. It's sitting in the front yard. And now I'm like, well, now what do I do? So I took a whole bunch of stuff out with me. I took my phone and my journal and my computer. And I had some art stuff that I was working on because, you know, I needed to look like I was just doing something. By going out front, I was saying to God, here I am, Lord, your will be done. Go before, behind, and beside me into the neighborhood. And that very day, life changed. And I met a neighbor within 3 hours of putting a table out in my front yard. A lot has happened since putting the table out there. There are a handful of women who are now very close friends who I did not know. It has become kind of a gathering place.
I'm Bob.
Nice to
this
meet
is
you.
My daughter, Peggy.
So one of the best things is just the sense of normal community, everyday life. The neighborhood kids come over. They'll do homework when the weather's pretty. We've had lemonade stands, hot cocoa stands. More intimately, it's a place where I can meet and have met neighbors who now pop by with coffee and just for 15 minutes, a conversation over coffee that wouldn't have happened. The Lord has taught me, and I am learning to be present. It sounds like it should be a no-brainer, but listening is not a skill that came naturally at first to me, nor was being present.
It was great to see you.
Loving my neighbors has taught me how to love God better. It's drawn me into deeper relationship with Him. You don't need permission or a program to go outside and be who Christ has called you to be. When we open up our front door and we take 3 steps right out our front yard, good things happen. Open up your door and let God do the rest.
Isn't that good? So some of you are thinking, like, I can't really put a table in my front yard. That's just not going to work in the place where I live. Let me just tell you, if you're thinking that, that is what we call loophole thinking. Okay? You don't have to put a table in your front yard. Do whatever is best, comfortable for you. Just get to know people and watch God do the rest. We are on the verge of seeing the city of Austin transformed. 150,000 Christians, if each would just take responsibility to get to know the people that are immediately around them, beginning to pray for them, we're looking at between 500,000 to 1 million people that have a Christian that is in proximity that says, I'm going to obey Jesus and love my neighbor as myself and watch how God changes the city. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, some of the most simple, easy, straightforward things oftentimes become so lost in the busyness of life. Teach us to love you with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love the people that are close by as we would love ourselves. May we, the people of God, be known as those who are the best neighbors to live next door to. Father, may people actually seek out homes to live near us because of the love that comes through Jesus into our hearts and into theirs. And Father, would you change us as you change our city, our nation, and our world? We pray this in the powerful name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.